It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. Samadhi, the subject for today, according to Dogen, is the Dharma gate of enjoyment and ease. So what is enjoyment and ease? Let's look at how the Samadhi master, Ryokan, lives his life. This is a poem from Ryokan. A spring wind brought gentle rain, soaking the grass roof during the night. Sleeping below in peace, how does the dweller know the happenings of the floating world? At daylight, as blue mountains appear, spring birds begin their song on the branches of trees. I too leave my hermitage to wander with no particular place to go. A stream supplies water to the distant village. Radiant flowers shine on the green mountains. Who is that old man leading the ox? Whose son carries the hoe? The four seasons revolve without cease. In each season, each person does his own work. Ah, what do? I simply stand for a long time at the gate of my hometown. That's the poem. So what in the world is samadhi? Zen Buddhist priest Pat Enkyo O'Hara points out that if we consider the English word concentrate, which originally meant to bring something to the center, and later came to imply distilling by removing the inessential, and finally to focus one's attention, we can form a mental map of this word concentration as it is used to translate samadhi. We bring our mind to the center. We let the incidental thoughts drop away. We align and stabilize. We stop the scattering. We focus. In his Shobo Genzo essay, 37 Wings of Enlightenment, Dogen says, "The owner of samadhi is like a child having a mother, or a mother having a child. It is like a child having a child, or a mother having a mother." So the ability to be quiet in our minds, in safety, to allow ourselves to rest on the breast of life, this is the world of Dogen Samadhi. And it's important to see this. We don't hear about this deeply rested mind very often. Just as Dogen emphasized that Zazen is not a path to enlightenment, but actually is the manifestation of enlightenment, so too, expression of samadhi manifests our ordinary lives. This is the main point for today. Samadhi manifests in our ordinary lives. There is a story of Yun Men who was asked by his disciple, "What is every atom samadhi?" And that comes up. It just comes up in a sutra, and so the disciple says, "What is every atom samadhi?" And Yun Men replied, rice in the bowl, water in the bucket. And this references a chapter of a scripture called the flower ornament scripture about how bodhisattvas enter every atom samadhi. So they enter concentration on one atom and accomplish concentration on all atoms. And yet that particular particle doesn't increase in one or manifest inconceivable lands. That's part of the scripture. But in the scripture, there's an image resembling space travel where a bodhisattva, on entering every atom concentration, visits many lands and has spiritual powers and exhibits brilliance and light. And Yunmen, referring to this image, says it means rice in the bowl and water in the bucket. Yunmen goes from a fantastical imagination back to this moment in life, right here, right now. Our ordinary life as we live it is every atom samadhi. Samadhi and our ordinarily daily life are not two. And it bears repeating that when we first begin our meditation practice, we may think that we're going to obtain something. It's just normal. And we're going to go and we're going to get something that will make our life better. But actually, what we learn is that we're letting go of what impedes us. We begin to declutter our minds. We let go of a lot of old baggage that we've been dragging around that prevents us from encountering our lives freshly. Instead of our outmoded, no longer helpful voices, you know, railing about our personal lives, our social relations, and the world around us, we find ourselves experiencing the world and others differently. So what's happened? What's happened? We've just started, quote, meditating. This can be seen as experiencing the benefits of baby samadhi, of the freshness and innocence and the joy and openness and aliveness and immediacy of a baby. Everything is new for a baby. It doesn't know how to do anything. Everything is an experiment. And there's a teaching on this experience in the Blue Cliff Record, where a monk asks, these are all koans, and a monk asks Chochu, does a newborn baby have the sixth consciousnesses? And Chochu says, like tossing a ball on swift flowing water. This is really an important image, this ball on a swiftly flowing water. So the monk asks, Tutsu, what is the meaning of tossing a ball on swift flowing water? And Tutsu said, moment to moment, nonstop flow. And the priest Pat Enrico O'Hara comments, the questioner asks whether a newborn baby is conscious of hearing, seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Those are the six senses, sense consciousnesses. And he is directly asking if a person in samadhi is aware of these senses. Are they present when you're having samadhi? And the response is this ball on swiftly flowing water. So this ball bouncing on flowing water over waves and under them, bumbling into eddies and just responding exquisitely to the flow of reality around it. The reality in which it finds itself. What better image is there than a ball on swiftly flowing water? This is the flow that is here and now, not our idea of some enlightened here and now, but our actual lives, genuinely lived. So isn't this comforting? We just have to live our life. Listen to the tail end of Ryokan's poem. There's a poem of his called "Just This Is It." And at the very end, he says, "In this village, playing with these children, bouncing a tamari together, I wish this spring day would never grow dark." This tamari, it's spelled T-E-M-A-R-I, and they were little balls made from very colorful paper wrapped around a core. And Ryokan himself painted these balls. He painted the paper, he made the balls, and they're just literally gorgeous. They're like art pieces. And that's what he used for playing with the children. So he's very involved in playing with children. And Okumura Roshi comments, "In a farming village, everyone has to work in the fields from early morning until after sunset. And especially in the spring, adults are busy transplanting rice seedlings and they can't care for their children. The older children take care of the younger children and carry the babies on their backs. But Ryokan and the children enjoy the spring day, become absorbed in playing together, and forget time is passing. Meanwhile, Ryokan, you know, he's a Zen master actually, and he's playing with these children, teaching them and caretaking them so their parents can work without worrying." In the main part of the poem, a passerby watches Ryokan playing with the children and he laughs at him and says, "Why do you do such a thing?" And this person is probably a farmer who works all day and is asking a question similar to the derogatory question that a farmer once asked Shakyamuni Buddha while he was begging for food. You know, why, you know, I work, what are you doing? And Ryokan, Buddha, who's a teacher naturally, knew just what to say to this farmer. Actually, the farmer then became a student of the Buddha. But Ryokan is not like that. And he just lowered his head. And because not only does he not grow food, he even forgets to do his begging and he just drops everything and starts playing with the children. And so he feels there's no way to explain why he's doing such a thing. And in the final lines of the poem, he writes, "If you want to know the meaning of this, fundamentally, just this is it. Just this is it." And "just this is it" is an expression from a conversation. You should already know this by now. It comes from a koan. "Just this is it," from a conversation between Dongchan Lingji and his teacher Yunyan Tansheng. So Dongchan asks Yunyan, "After your death, if someone asks me if I can describe your reality, how shall I reply?" So after a while, Yunyan said, "Just this is it." And later on, after Dongchan became the abbot, he held a memorial service for Yunyan. And when he was presenting offerings before the image of Yunyan, a monk asked, "What is the meaning of Yunyan saying, 'just this is it'?" And this expression became a case in the Book of Serenity, which is a book of koans. And "just this is it" is the only thing we can say to express the true reality of ourself that is beyond the reach of words or language. Just this is it. Like, what else can we say? This poem of Ryokan's that I'm about to read you is called Zazen. "Looking back, I see more than 70 years have already passed. I tire of seeing through right and wrong in the human world. Snow in the late night covers all traces of coming and going. A stick of incense burns by the old window. I sit. And Okamura Roshi comments, Ryokan is talking about his attitude toward the world. Either way, whether because he completely saw through the nature of the world of right and wrong, or because he became tired of watching things and making judgments, he casts aside discrimination. This is part of the nature and quality of his zazen. He casts aside discrimination. It's very hard to cast aside discrimination. So this is what I'm about to say is really important. Maybe it's the most important thing. Everything is covered with snow. So this is about the poem, Ryokan's poem. I just read you those four lines. Everything is covered with snow. And snow is a symbol of the Dharma without discrimination. Snow is only one color, white. The entire world becomes one color. The words one color are sometimes used to modify the word Dharma, one color Dharma. Each thing is different, but when covered with snow are the Dharma beyond discrimination, everything becomes Dharma. This is what Dogen Zenji meant when he said that all Dharmas are all beings, are Buddha Dharma. Each and every particular, our different thing, is covered by snow and becomes one color. What Ryokan describes here is not simply the scenery outside his hut. It displays his zazen. Every kind of good and bad thing is covered by the Dharma within his zazen. So there's something amazingly correct in non-discrimination. And actually, it's one of my New Year's resolutions. I never make New Year's resolutions, but this year I did. And one of the three things was non-discrimination. Just try. So Ryokan says, a stick of incense burns by the old window. And all that is happening is that incense burns and Ryokan sits. And Roshi says, I think this is really beautiful. And I think that comment, I think it is really beautiful. I think it's really beautiful. That's what Roshi comments on the line, all that is happening is that the incense burns and Ryokan sits. It's just like life itself. And then another zazen poem by Ryokan. Finished with begging in a desolate village, I return to my hermitage with its mossy green rock. As the evening sun sets behind the western ridge, the pale moon is reflected in the stream before my hut. I wash my feet and ascend the rock, burn incense and sit peacefully in zazen. Also a child of the Sangha, how can I spend the passing years in vain? Ryokan Zazen is not a practice for finding an original source that doesn't change and can be relied upon. He found that we can rely on nothing. Yet this phenomenal world of things on which we cannot rely is the only reality within which we can live and work. The phenomenal world of things on which we cannot rely is the only reality within which we can live and work. Thus, wherever Ryokan goes, he just plays with the murmuring stream, so to speak. When he was walking or begging, sometimes he stopped begging just to play with the children. Zazen is not a method to find truth or reality beyond this phenomenal world. Our Zazen is just being right here, right now. Our mind is always changing. Our physical condition is always changing. We often deviate from our Zazen and then we try to return to it. This process of returning is the most important point about our Zazen. So when you're doing Zazen and your mind wanders, then you bring it back. Then your mind wanders and then you bring it back. And then your mind wanders and then you bring it back. Okamura Roshi thinks that that's the most important point, the bringing it back. We often find our posture is not right. So when we become aware that our posture is twisted, we return to the upright posture. When we return right now, right here, to this moment with body and mind, and that's the only thing we can do in our Zazen. Our Zazen is not a method to reach an original source. The original source is right here, right now. That is what Roshi is saying about, that's what Ryokan is saying about his Zazen practice in this poem. And Roshi is commenting that that's what's happening. Ryokan often uses the term taza, as in shikan taza. And Dogen called his practice sitting. Taza is sitting, and Dogen called his practice sitting more often than he called it meditation or Zen. So Dogen used the word taza to describe his sitting practice. And we often just say sitting, meaning Zazen. And Okamura Roshi says that actually, I think our sitting practice is not meditation. In order to meditate, we need to meditate on something. But in Shikan Taza, there's no object to meditate on. We just sit. So he says, I don't like the phrase to practice meditation. Okamura Roshi says he doesn't like meditation as our word. Our word is really Zazen or sitting. So in a different poem, Ryokan is sitting as it stops raining and the moon appears, and yet he is still surrounded by sounds of raindrops. And Okamura Roshi says, to me, this describes our Zazen. During our day-to-day lives, we usually have rain inside of ourselves. And when we sit, the rain ceases and the moon appears, yet within our mind, different kinds of sounds from our karmic consciousness remain. The rain has stopped and the moon is there, yet we have to say that even though the moon is there and it's bright, we still hear the sound of our karmic consciousness. That is what is really happening in our Zazen. When Ryokan speaks of like a precious moment of serenity known only to me, he is saying that there's no way to share our Zazen. But it is said that we should sit alone, practice by yourself, together with others. Although we are alone, we cannot be alone. We are always together with others. So only Buddha is one side of our being, and together Buddha is another side of our being, of our life. We're both only Buddha and together, Buddha. And we sit alone. We sit alone with all beings. Our practice is not escaping from delusion to attain enlightenment. We just exist right here, right now, with the confusion. We often sit with confusion. There is no reality without this confusion, our problems or pain or busy mind. There is no reality besides this sitting, with confusion. There's no enlightenment besides this sitting with delusion. That is what Dogen said. This is so great. Buddhas are greatly enlightened within delusion, and we living beings are greatly deluded within realization. So we are actually in the same place. We are deluded within realization, and Buddhas are enlightened within delusion. And so we are the same. Buddhas and living beings are living in the same situation, but we are deceived by this condition, and Buddhas see through the nature of this condition. Buddhas and living beings are living in the same situation, but we are deceived by this condition, and Buddhas see through the nature of this condition. In one fascicle of the Shobo Genzo, Dogen Zenji uses the expression, this sutra, but he wasn't referring to a written sutra like the Lotus Sutra. Instead, he called the reality of all beings this sutra. All living beings are this sutra. We are born, live, and die within this sutra. We ourselves are the actual words written in the sutra, just living this life with this body and mind together with all beings is the way we read and chant this sutra. Ryokan describes what he is doing is Zen without practice. Zen without practice. For him, this sitting is not a practice. It's like the sutra without words. This sitting is just sitting. It's not a practice in the sense of a method or means to get some good result. For Ryokan, this zazen is not a method. This zazen itself is the goal. We have already arrived. We are there. And I think this is the reality of our life and our zazen. This is Zen practice without practice. In another poem, among branches of weeping willow, a warbler is singing, and in the village, a dog barks at the moon. Again, this is our zazen. We sit and a dog barks. Beyond this, nothing disturbs my mind, writes Ryokan. Thoughts come and go, and there's no separation between the sound of the dog barking and the bird singing and myself as hearer. There is no subject-object separation. The sounds are from me. Ryokan concludes the poem with an important question. Why is there something else to be transmitted as the mind? This means there is no mind that we can transmit to others, even though in Zen practice, people say Zen is transmitted mind to mind or heart to heart. But what Ryokan is saying here is that there's no way to transmit this heart. That means my heart is only mine, and your heart is only yours. So this is the same as only Buddha and together Buddha. Ryokan is pointing out the side of only Buddha. Whatever is happening in my zazen is only my zazen. There's no way to share it with other people. And it's true, our practice is a lonely practice because it can't be passed on. Within Ryokan's loneliness, all beings are there together with him, and yet he is alone. We are alone with all beings. I think we can sense his longing to transmit because he sits alone, he practices alone. He has no temple, no sangha, and yet he really wishes to share this practice with someone. And in a sense, writing these poems is a way he shares his experience. Through reading these poems, we share the same experience with Ryokan. Okamura Roshi says, at least when I read these poems, I think I have the same experience, the same feeling, the same reality that I feel Ryokan experienced. And Roshi says, still, this is just my thinking, and there's no way to really be sure that what he experienced and what I wrote and what I read in these poems is the same thing. Yet I feel that what he wrote and what I read and what I experience in my zazen are one thing. This is the way he shared his practice with us. To say I cannot share is a way to share. So here are some of the most important points that I've just made. First, right here, right now, our ordinary life as we live it is every atom samadhi. Samadhi and daily ordinary life are not two. And second, each thing is different, but when covered with snow or the Dharma, are the Dharma beyond discrimination, everything becomes Dharma. Dharma beyond discrimination. That's the Dharma that covers everything. Third, consider how a ball bounces, moves, flows over waves and under them, bumbles into eddies, and just responds exquisitely to the flow of reality around it, the reality in which it finds itself. This flow that is here and now, not our idea of some enlightened here and now, but our actual lives, genuinely lived. That's what this flow is. And fourth, we often find our posture is not upright. So whenever we become aware that our posture is twisted, we try to return to the upright posture. We return to right now, right here, to this moment with this body and mind. And fifth, it bears repeating that when we first begin our meditation practice, we may be thinking that we're going to obtain something, we're going to go and get something that will make our life better. But actually, what we learn is that we're letting go of what impedes us. And finally, sixth, Buddhas and living beings are living in the same situation. But we are deceived by this condition, and Buddha sees through the nature of this condition. Here are some ideas for you to reflect or write about during the week to help you kind of take all this in and make it your own. So I have five things, ideas for you. The first is about just this is it. That's the only thing to say to express the true reality of the self. That's beyond reach of words or language. For you to, how would you put the true reality of yourself into words? It's worth trying to do that. Second, we often deviate from our zazen and then try to return to it. And this process of returning is the most important point about our zazen. Comment on this statement of Okamura Roshi's in terms of your own zazen practice. How is it for you, actually? What is it? What happens in your zazen? And third, the rain has stopped and the moon is there, yet we have to say that even though the moon is there and bright, we still hear the sound of our karmic consciousness. That is what is really happening in our zazen. Do you agree? And what is the sound of your karmic consciousness? And fourth, we are deluded within realization, and the Buddhas are enlightened within delusion. So we are the same. What is your understanding and experience of this statement? And finally, five, samadhi and daily ordinary life are not two. Do you believe this? How do you know? How do you know? Where in your body does this truth live? Or if you don't believe it, where in your body does the disbelief live? So how do you know? How do you know what you know? Those are the ideas for you to write about during the week. I wonder if there are any questions.
Thank you, Gail. The first question that we have is, Buddhas and living beings are living in the same situation. But we are deceived by this condition, and Buddhas see through the nature of this condition. Since we're not Buddhas, how can we not be deceived by the nature of this condition?
You know, actually, we are Buddhas. But when we're one with ourselves and our activities, this question doesn't exist. Actually, when we're one with ourselves and our activities, no questions exist. And how can we be one with ourselves and our activities? First, you have to know, who am I? You have to answer that question. And then second, you have to create the circumstances in which you can manifest the answer to that question. And then finally, you have to fully enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself in the circumstances that you've created so that you can manifest the answer to that question. That's one way. And another way is to just believe, just faith and devotion, to just believe what everyone, all of the Zen masters, all the way back, they all say the same thing. They speak of their own experience, not something that they've read in a book. Huineng, the sixth ancestor, was illiterate. He couldn't have read in a book. And they all say the same thing. That's all.
The next comment that we have is, our practice is a lonely practice because it can't be passed on. It's also lonely because we do it alone. Even in the midst of other people, it feels that we do it alone. I guess this is the impermanence that is so difficult to accept. I guess I'm just musing aloud.
I know. I remember exactly the moment when I was a teenager, when I realized this very thing. And I couldn't take it in, really. It was like I realized how alone we are, but at the moment it was like I am. And not alone like there's no people there, but alone like I have to die alone, I was born alone and I have to die alone. But you know, now from another point of view altogether, I realize that we're never alone, that the whole universe is there to support us. And we are constantly supported by all beings. And we live our lives along with all beings, and we die along with all beings. And this realization isn't at all painful. So I think both are true. It's just like Suzuki Roshi said, not always so. Nothing is always so. But it's helped me to come to understand and really feel, increasingly at least, feel that that I'm supported by all beings. So the idea of dying alone, it's sort of like Ryokan sitting alone, sitting Zazen alone, but along with all beings. And he was aware of that. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we just got is not a question, but I wanted to say that your explanations and discussions about Zazen have been so helpful to me over the past weeks. I've been sitting regularly and entering it with an attitude of just sitting, without a goal in mind. Sometimes feeling peaceful and sometimes not. You said something early in today's discussion about dropping the judging mind, and Zazen feels like a refuge from my judging mind. It has been a gift. Thank you for this series and for your insights.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate hearing that. And especially hearing that you're sitting and trying to sit without discrimination. It's a very hard one. It's amazing how hard. The judging mind just comes forth. These likes and dislikes. And one of the reasons we have to work on this is that it's part of what keeps us in samsara, you know, our likes and dislikes. And then we go after what we like, and then we hold on to what we like, and then we grasp what we like. And that's what keeps the cycle of birth and death going. As according to Buddhism, there's 12 steps in this cycle, and they just keep repeating and keep repeating until we're able to step out of the cycle. And part of that is non-discrimination. But thank you for sharing that experience. So that's all.
The next question that we have is, I just want to say that human beings don't seem to change. The wars going on now are the same as what went on in Buddha's time, in Dogen's time, in Ryokan's time, and earlier in our time with Hitler and the bombing of Hiroshima. It's just disheartening, and yet I feel I can only make certain that I am not like that, and even that's hard.
I know. All we can do really is change ourselves. And fortunately, it's easier for us Zen Buddhists because we have the precepts, and the precepts are so helpful to, are we doing the right thing? And I don't think of Zen as a religion, but other many religions, let's just say, have an equivalent to the precepts. And we need something to tell us what to do because we need to be told what to do. And we need training. And in the next series, I'm going to go back and explain again. We've talked about it briefly in one of the lectures, this idea of the Alaya consciousness. It's the eighth consciousness, and there are seven others. The first six are the six sense consciousnesses, eye, ear, nose, etc. But but then we get the ego consciousness and the Avaya consciousness. And I'll explain about this again, because from a Buddhist psychological point of view, this is why it's so hard. It explains exactly why it's so hard. So I'm looking forward to the next series when this is going to be a part of it. Just to acknowledge that it is hard. I don't know how much help that is, but that's all.
So someone shared that one could say that Ryokan had baby samadhi, right? It looks like all he does is play with children, but he is a Zen master. So it isn't the same as when I play with children. But what exactly is the difference?
Ryokan, as a Zen master, knows who he is. He knows who he is because of training. And it's that bamboo stick I talked about a few talks ago. This is a Katagiri Roshi idea that's just absolutely perfect. He says, we're all like, if you go to a Zen monastery, you come in with yourself like a snake, and your life just goes zigzag here and there and everywhere. And you stay with the schedule, and you know, and you have to squeeze yourself in the schedule, and you stay with the schedule and stay with the schedule. And the schedule, which is hard, by the way, it's really hard to stay with it. But you come out straightened out. You're straightened out, and when you leave, everything is very fresh, kind of like baby samadhi. This question, who am I, must be answered before you can live your life. Otherwise, you don't know what life you're living. You just don't know. You must answer that question, because we all have our life. And once you have answered that to your satisfaction, the whole world comes in to support you living that life. And then you feel it. You feel the whole world joining you to be a carpenter. Or the whole world joins you to be a chef. The whole world joins you to be a musician. It's a wonderful feeling. But that's the difference. Ryokan knew exactly who he was. And so he was free to be whatever he felt like in the moment. And he did it with no leftovers. Right? There was no agenda, and there was no leftovers. That's all.
Thank you, Gail. So I think this will be the last question. Snow in the late night covers all traces of coming and going. A stick of incense burns by the old window I sit. I love these lines. It gives me a sense of forever. Ryokan sits and I get a sense of forever, like the words from Dogen, old man Zhang drinks and old man Li gets drunk.
I know, you know, that says everything. It just says everything about our interconnectedness, which is the main thing. This interconnectedness is so important. And old man Zhang gets drunk and old man Li, no, drinks and old man Li gets drunk. It's just perfect. It's almost like there's nothing else to say. I am going to talk a lot about Ryokan next in the next series. And one reason is that Okamura Roshi implies a real connection between Ryokan and Dogen. He sees definite similarities, and I think it's there too. And so Ryokan becomes a very important. He's easier. He's easier than Dogen, and so it's interesting to study his life and his poetry. We're going to stop now, and I want to thank again Brian and Sahar and Brendan for doing all the work they do to make these presentations possible. And I want to say that the next series will start on April 10th, and it's called Vow in Action, A Modern Triumvirate of Soto Zen Masters. And basically, I'm going to be showing you, telling you the life story of three Zen related Soto Zen masters, and how you can see from their lives, their vow. A week before, during the week before, we'll give you the email blast for you to sign up for the series. So be sure to look out long before April 10th for the email blast so that you can register. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.